Okay, today we continue our discussion of Erev Shabbos. Last week we discussed how Shabbos is the Erev Shabbos is the transition between the weekdays and Shabbos. And if you don't have that proper transition, you're not going to be able to get into the Shabbos properly. And therefore, Erev Shabbos is going to have the qualities of the weekdays and the qualities of Shabbos together. So the whole nature of the day is going to be a different type of a day. So I don't remember, I may overlap a few things we mentioned last week. I don't remember every single thing I mentioned last week. We talked about Shabbos being the wedding. We talked about that last week.
Yeah. Shabbos being the wedding.
Yeah. And the three stages of the wedding.
Yes.
Three steps. Okay. So we took care of that. Okay. So we start off, it's a mitzvah to make as many preparations for Shabbos as possible by yourself. The Gemara gives us all kinds of, you have to remember, you're talking like the arrival of a king is coming. So it's a great honor for the arrival of a king. There's rabbis in the Talmud who, although their time was very precious, they themselves would personally make preparations, even if they were wealthy people. So tell us, Rabbi Avoh, he would prepare, he would fan the fire of the oven to prepare the food for cooking. Rava would salt a special fish. Let's see, I've got some pop-ups over here. And that fish only came on Erev Shabbos. You can only catch the special fish on Erev Shabbos. So it was caught and he could only prepare it on Erev Shabbos. Rav Papa would braid the wicks for the oil lamps. Rav Chista would slice beets. Other rabbis would chop wood. So you see that these rabbis, as important as they were, trying to close this. I don't know why I can't close it. Yeah, as important as their time was, they felt it was still important to prepare for Shabbos. I once read a story about this person who was very particular to do something to prepare for Shabbos, and the whole family was, it was, I think, like a Sheva Brachas or something in a hotel. So there was literally nothing for him to prepare for Shabbos because the host family had a caterer and everything. And he was beside himself. He never, how can he get him into Shabbos without preparing for the Shabbos? So he was bugging the hotel manager, caterer. Says, isn't there anything I could do to get ready for Shabbos? And you need any help in the kitchen? No, all the food's already prepared, this and that. So I forget exactly. He said, well, can I just like just go into the kitchen and just make sure that all the food is ready, you know? He says, sir, we have everything ready. Everything's taken care of for professionals. Well, can you just do me a favor and just let me go in for 5 minutes so I can just see that everything's fine? Okay, you know, he's very frustrated with this guy who's bugging him a lot. And when he goes in to the kitchen, and he sees nothing is on. And it turns out that the fuses to the kitchen all went out. The rest of the hotel was fine. But all the fuses of the kitchen had gone out. That means all the food would have been cold and spoiled. So he was able to do something to prepare for Shabbos. So you have to see, it's an important thing to get ready for Shabbos. Even if you have nannies in the house that can clean the house. Even if you can buy a lot of takeout food. Now, I'm not meaning to say that you're not allowed to make use of a housekeeper. I'm not saying you're not allowed to take out food. But the point being, it's, of course, it's very difficult. You have to balance work and, to, you know, now that many families, both spouses work and you have to work on Friday. I understand the pressures. And to the degree that it's possible to do as much as you can yourself shows how honorable it is the Shabbos, that you want to take care of it. And the more you take care of, the more you invest in the Shabbos, and the more you have the holy thoughts of that, the better it is. You know, the great Hasidic masters were very particular about this. I don't remember which Hasidic master it was. I remember the stories, but I don't remember the names. I have lots of trouble remembering names. And there was one that that his Rebbetzin always made the fish. She always made the fish. Well, there was a particular Shabbos, the Rebbetzin either, she was probably was not well. So the Rebbetzin's daughter said, I'll take care of the fish. Don't worry, you don't have to worry. You'll have your Shabbos fish. Everything will be fine. Serve the fish to the Rebbe. Rebbe takes a bite. He says, you didn't prepare the fish, did you? He says, what do you mean? He says, it's not possible you prepared the fish. He says, well, not exactly. I was kind of busy, so I had one of the non-Jewish cooks prepare the fish. So I could tell. It didn't have the taste of Shabbos in it. So, you know, a lot of that is your own personal, as you're preparing and you constantly saying, I'm doing this L'Kavod Shabbos in honor of the Shabbos. You invest a certain degree of holiness into everything that is going to be Shabbos. The preparations to all mitzvahs are critical, especially to a mitzvah as precious as Shabbos. So again, you have to balance, but the more you personally make, you're not going to make it with the same holy thoughts as a non-Jewish nanny. You're not. Even if you're going to tell her it's in honor of the Shabbat, our holy day, they have no idea what it is. They understand, okay, I got to do a good job. That's all. I don't expect them to know any more. They're not Jewish. Why should they? But they're not going to. So, you maybe have lesser important jobs. She can clean the toilets. You can, not everything. There are more. There's a hierarchy of what's more important for Shabbos. The food that we're going to eat is obviously of a higher. We're going to make brachos on the food, while the washrooms, okay. So if you have to kind of limit how much time you have, then the things that are more relevant to the Shabbos, you should take more of time into that as possible. Okay. Parents should see to it that on Friday, each child should do a household chore in honor of the Shabbos. So they're trained in that. It doesn't matter what age. Everybody should feel, a responsibility and an honor to prepare for the Shabbos. You should eagerly make preparation for Shabbos and scurry about excitedly, like a person who's told that a queen or a bride and her entourage are coming to lodge in his or her house. And if you had important, really important people in your house, you would really be on your toes. Before you buy things for Shabbos, or when you prepare something for Shabbos, you should say, I'm buying or doing this in honor of the Shabbos. So when you're in Sobeys, and you're picking out a roast, you should say, L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh, L'Kavod Shabbat Kodesh, in honor of the Shabbos, I'm buying the fish. You could say it 20 times when you're in Sobeys. Every time, I'm buying this whatever, this fish for Shabbos. I'm buying these vegetables for Shabbos. It's all for Shabbos. Whatever you're doing, keep saying, I'm doing this in honor of the Shabbos. Okay, we're jumping around a little bit here, but I already got you moved ahead over here. Take a few moments to mentally prepare yourself for Shabbos. Be mindful that you're about to be the host of the King of all kings. With a proper mental attitude, you honor Hashem. It's not just you're doing a bunch of jobs to get ready for this distant thing called Shabbos. It's Hashem is mamish coming to your place, and you want to be mindful of that. Okay, preparing now the details. That was general. Now details. Preparing the Shabbos food. We should honor the Shabbos in the best possible way with the most delectable food and drink. The way we prepare the special Shabbos dishes, from shopping to baking to tasting the food, is a clear indication of how we honor the Shabbos. Now, this is another important thing. If at all possible, women should make challah in honor of the Shabbos. They should remember to do the mitzvah of separating challah from the dough as well. Now, there's all kinds of reasons for this. Number one, the whole reason we have challah is to remember, one of the reasons, is to remember the lechem haponim, the showbreads. Every Friday, they baked 12 fresh challahs in the Beit HaMikdash. And every Shabbos morning, afternoon, they would switch. They'd take the new breads and put it on the table in the Beit HaMikdash, take the old ones out, put the new ones in. It was one of the services of the temple. And then they would divide up the 12 loaves, or very big loaves of bread, for all the Kohanim to eat. So that's one concept that we have over there. Now, we understand the mitzvah of challah really says, you got all this dough, but I'm only allowed to... You know, really, you should know, the fact that we call challah challah is a very interesting, sort of a misnomer, so to speak. What I mean to say, the part you separate, that's the challah. The rest is just your bread, is your dough. You know, but we seem to have coined the bread based on the mitzvah that we're doing on it. But, you know, you take challah from anything. You take challah sometimes, depending on the type of cake you make, from a cake dough, and you're certainly not calling that challah. If you had made a 5 pounds of cake with a pretty thick batter, you would take challah off of that, and you wouldn't call the cake challah. Right? So it's really not challah, you're taking challah off of the bread, and then you can benefit from it. Similarly, you know, the first man really was the first challah in the world. He really was, because what was man made of? Made of the earth, the water, the elements of the world. Man comes completely from the ground. The body does, at least. And as he came out of the ground, that was like that challah that got separated from the earth. Okay? And now, the earth now has meaning. It has meaning that we separated, like challah, the human being, came out of the earth. So too, the bread that you're eating has meaning and purpose now that you've done a mitzvah and you've given the first portion to the Kohen or someone who represents Hashem. So, it's interesting, the first woman, she kind of messed up the first man, kind of wrecked up the first challah, so to speak. So as a kapara, as it were, the mitzvah has fallen on women to make challah. Certainly, men who make bread have to separate challah as well. This is part of her tikkun on that, as it were. It's interesting, the Chafetz Chaim, who wrote these words well over 100 years ago, and he lived in Eastern Europe, he bemoaned the fact in those days that ladies in his time did not make the challah but bought from bakeries. And he was critical of the women for doing that, saying, you have a great mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to make challah, separate the challah. It's an amazing mitzvah. The Satmar Rav says, if women knew the reward for making bread and separating the challah, all Jews who knew this, all bakeries would close down. If they knew the reward was there. Now again, I don't want people to feel guilty if you buy challahs. It's not here to make you feel guilty. I'm just telling you what are the different opportunities to show honor for the Shabbos. And certainly, you know, freshly baked challahs is one of the ways of doing it. You know, a lot of people think, you know, that the Kohanim were very privileged characters. And they were. They were very privileged. But you have to realize, a lot of the work they did was not so glorified. Who do you think made challahs in the Beis HaMikdash? Who made them? They didn't have any non-Jewish workers there. All the workers were Kohanim and Levim, period. This is the higher echelon of society. And there would be special Kohanim. Their job was, every day, there were breads to be made and, you know, all kinds of things. Animals to be slaughtered, animals to be bought. I mean, there's lots of, you know, quote-unquote mundane tasks that had to happen. And these were people who otherwise were very spiritual people. They each Kohen only worked 2 weeks in the temple. The other weeks he was a scholar. And he would learn Torah, teach Torah. It's like big rabbis. But yet they knew when it was their time to work, they did all these things. So I always say that the woman of the house should feel that she's the Kohen of the house. And some of them even the Kohen Gadol of the house. Because that's really, the Kohen Gadol really very rarely left the house of the temple. So the woman, so to speak, is running the house that's like a temple. So just like women should figure, I'm doing the same thing that Kohanim did thousands of years ago. And to have those thoughts that it's, you know, in honor of the Shabbos and all the other stuff the Rebbetzin's been teaching about making challah, So again, I know it takes time, and it's not always possible people have the time, but it's a great mitzvah that one should do if they can. Now, it's a custom to place the challahs on the Shabbos table as soon as they come out of the oven in honor of Shabbos. Now, again, you have to be practical, you know. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, you have those challahs coming out of the oven on a Friday like this, like at 3:30, you know, and they're steaming, and you put them right into the on the table, and that's as close to the way it was in the Beit HaMikdash as possible. I understand it can't be practical. You may have to even make challahs the night before and things like that. But, you know, but it should be, either way, when you're setting the table, one of the first things going on the table should be the challah. That's it, because that really is the quote-unquote the real actual mitzvah that's on the table. I mean, the plates and the forks and the napkins are all nice and wonderful, but they aren't really quote-unquote the mitzvah. The challah is the mitzvah. The bracha is going to be on the challah, not on the forks. And that's the first bracha you're going to make is going to be on the challah. So as you're setting the table, you know, the first focus should be on the challah that's going on over there. And there are some people who like to put the challahs in the oven, keep them warm, and bring them out as well. I mean, you could do that too. So but there's different options, but it does take a very prominent role. Now, it's best to do your shopping during the week, if, again, as close to Shabbos as is practical and possible. The reason being, if you're buying it close to Shabbos, it shows that you're doing it for Shabbos. If you do it on Monday, it's not so easy for us to know that you're doing it for Shabbos. It doesn't mean to say you can't do it on Monday. You know, it depends on your schedule. You know, some people are very busy on Friday. It's not going to work. I try my best to never be in Sobeys on Thursday or Friday, you know. The best time to shop in Sobeys, you know what it is?
Monday morning.
Saturday night. Oh. Me and my wife said getting ready for Shabbos Saturday night. There's nobody there on Saturday night. And you can get, and there's always everything's there. Like, it's like unbelievable. It's just about everything. It's like you go in and out, like there's nobody there. So, again, you do what's practical and possible. The ingredients that can be prepared quickly should be bought on Friday, but the ingredients for dishes that take a long time to prepare should be bought on Thursday or earlier, so there's enough time to get them ready. If it's not possible, I buy the items even on Thursday. One can purchase them early in the week, as long as you're keeping your mind on what's going on over here. So again, there's obviously going to be difference between homemakers, women who don't work for the week, and women who do work. Obviously, there's going to have to be some changes there, obviously. Here's an important point. One should not spare expense when making purchases for Shabbos. One should make sure to serve fish, meat, wine, or other sweet beverage that he does not drink during the week at each of the Shabbos meals, which means to say, you're honoring the Shabbos because you do everything on Shabbos different than during a weekday. Everything is different as much as possible. I mean, you breathe the same, but that's about it. But everything should be different, from clothes to food. And, I mean, okay, obviously some things will be the same if you drink water a whole week long, okay. But I'm saying whatever is the nicer food, if you're looking at your week, so the best food should be on Shabbos. And you should not spare any expense. The Talmud says that all the money that you are destined to make during the year, Hashem decides on Rosh Hashanah. Your net profit or loss for the year, that includes everything, the money you earn, the expenses you have, everything you have, it's all determined in Rosh Hashanah, with the exception of three things. The money that you spend on Shabbos, the money that you spend on Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh, and the money that you spend on Jewish education for your children. That you get bonus. So if God says you're supposed to make a net gain of $100,000 for this year, so don't think, well, you know, I don't. How much of that's going to be spent on Shabbos? The answer is zero. Whatever you spend, as long, but it's a big caveat, you're doing it in honor of the Shabbos and not in honor of gluttonizing. So you're doing it in honor of the Shabbos, then it's free of charge. And whatever you spend, although it's a lot of money, but if you're doing it l'kvod Shabbat, then it's on Hashem's tab. Because if you're doing it to show how precious the Shabbos is, they tell us the story of Yosef Moker Shabbos, who was a person who always went out of his way to honor the Shabbos. And he had a neighbor who was non-Jewish, very wealthy man. And the wealthy man, one day had a dream that all his wealth was going to go to Yosef Moker Shabbos. That's the last thing he would ever want to happen. So he said, okay, I'm going to make sure this isn't going to happen. So what did the guy do? He took all his wealth, he sold it all, and he got himself a fantastically enormous jewel. And he sewed it onto his hat. He says, this way, he'll never get it. I've got it all the time. He's never going to get this jewel. What happens? A few days later, he's walking, this non-Jewish guy's walking by the ocean. Big wind goes, and blows it right into the ocean. Sorry, Gewalt. I lost my wealth, all my wealth. I'm a poor man. At least I can take comfort in the fact that the Jew isn't going to get it. Okay, comes that Friday, Yosef Moker Shabbos, he's got everything ready for Shabbos, everything's ready to go. Anyway, these fishermen come about late afternoon, they catch the biggest fish they've ever seen. They go to the market, there's nobody there to buy it, because everybody's finished, all the Jews have bought their stuff, there's nothing. So they say, what are we going to do? It's a great fish, we could make so much money. So they said, listen, there's only one guy we know who could still buy it. You go to Yosef Moker Shabbos. If he can find a way to honor Shabbos more. So he gets a call. They knock on the door an hour before Shabbos, whatever. He said, listen, would you like to buy this fish? He says, wow, such a big fish. I'm going to have everything ready. But in honor of the Shabbos, for sure I'm going to buy it. What does he do? So right away, he prepares the fish. He cuts open the belly. In the belly of the fish was the jewel that the fish had swallowed that belonged to the wealthy fellow. So, I mean, that's the idea that that you don't really lose any money for what you prepare for the Shabbos. And, you know, Reb Shimshon Pinkus, Zichron Levracha, he would often speak to struggling Kollel families in Eretz Yisrael who were really poor, who really would skimp on paying for Shabbos. And he said it was very hard for him to explain to them that really you have to really go into the store and know that it's on someone else's tab. It's on God's account. And that's it. That's part of bitachon. Okay, so if you normally don't have, you know, ribs, face, I don't know, so you buy them on Shabbos, right? So that the best fruits, you buy on Shabbos. You know, the fact that you're dining with the king, it shows how important you're making the Shabbos for that. As is with everything else. Okay, so keeping that in line, therefore, it's preferable to get up early on Friday morning to make preparations for the Shabbos meals. Our grandmothers in Europe, or India, I'm guessing, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I only could talk about Europe because that's what my mother told me, I'll never show them. I mean, these women got up like 3 o'clock in the morning on Friday. It was like, no joke. You have to remember, not a lot of refrigeration, if any, okay. Not a lot of stove and counter space. I mean, you're talking about small homes, and they had, you know, bigger families than most people today. And they're getting up, you know, at 3 o'clock, and they're preparing everything that had to be made in honor of the Shabbos. There's so much to do. Now, obviously, you don't have to do that, but you know, if you want to prepare earlier, you can prepare earlier. Okay, but clearly this is planned out well in advance. There's another exciting mitzvah that the husbands especially like to do this one. It's a mitzvah to sample and taste the dishes that are prepared for Shabbos. Okay, there's two reasons for that. There's the pragmatic reason and the mystical reason. The pragmatic reason is to make sure it's good. You know, and you need to do this. You know, one time I went to a very nice bakery in this area. I will not mention their name. You'll see in a minute why. A good bakery. I have no complaints against the bakery. I forgot what we bought. It had to be some kind of a baked good. I think either it was a some kind of a cake. I remember some kind of cake or a kugel. I don't remember. And so we served it at the Shabbos table. Everyone takes the first bite and goes, they obviously had put salt instead of sugar in the recipe. And the fact is they knew that because when I came back after Shabbos, I said, yes, so the one with the salt, yeah. So I was negligent. It was my fault. I didn't, you figure it's from the bakery, like, so when you make it, okay, you never know. You figure from the bakery, it means their business to do it right, you know, because if they don't, they're going to be out of business. And I had bought that same item many, many times before. So, like, what I got to bother tasting it for? Well, now you know why. So that's a pragmatic reason. A lot of times, okay, not this company, but, you know, newlyweds, the wife is a rookie cook, so there could be really big problems the first year or so till they get it right, or whatever. Even things go wrong. Things can go wrong. So you should, you know, taste a little bit. But there's another idea behind it, a much deeper idea. So there's one or two sentences you can say before you partake of that. Obviously, if you're going to eat a little bit, you're going to make a bracha on it. That's for sure. If you're only tasting it like a culinary expert, and all you're doing is putting a little soup and then spitting it out, you know, then you don't have to make a bracha on it. But you preface it by saying this statement, either one of these two statements. The Talmud says that when rabbis would see each other, they would say the words, Olamcha tira bechayecho. May you merit to see your world in your lifetime. Which means to say that we know that all Jews have a share in the world to come. And as we spoke about last week, that Shabbos is a day where you could taste that. So they would bless each other saying, you know, you should see your future world now. You should be able to be so spiritual that the world to come, you're going to see now. Okay? And so as much as we physically can use the metaphor of what Shabbos is all about, we're trying to understand that it's all a metaphor for the next world. And therefore, just like Shabbos is the next world, Shabbos is a taste of the next world. So what's Erev Shabbos then? Erev Shabbos is what's before the next world. And we want everyone to appreciate the next world before they get to the next world. So just like we want you to appreciate in this world what the next world is going to be about. But Shabbos alone is that model for the next world. So Friday is the model for before the next world. So on Friday, you should already be enjoying your next world before you're going to enjoy the next world. You follow what I'm saying? So all the delicacies of Shabbos is that taste of the world to come. But we should be able to taste this before we go to the world to come. So that's the idea. Or another statement that comes out of the prayers. It says, Tohameha, those who taste it, Chaim Zochu. They merit life. It means to taste the Shabbos. If you're able to taste the Shabbos, you're tasting you're meriting your life. And the idea you're tasting the food in honor of Shabbos is the same thing. Okay, now that leads us to the other discussion. Well, how much food do you eat on Erev Shabbos? So we know you've got to be hungry for Shabbos. You shouldn't be starving for Shabbos. You shouldn't be fasting before Shabbos. You want to be ravenous as you come to the table and tired. But there are certain restrictions to make sure that you will have a good appetite for the meal. And the general rule is that 2.5 halachic hours before Shabbos. Now, that's not a real hour. I don't know if we've discussed this in the past. But during the course of the year, if you divide the light time minutes in the day, it's going to be sometimes the daytime will have much more than 12 hours of daylight, sometimes have much less than 12 hours of daylight. And you can look in a chart that gives you what the halachic hours are. Let's say this time of year, a halachic hour is around 40 minutes or so. So 2.5 halachic hours is 40, and 40 is 80, and 20 is 100, an hour and 40 minutes before, around. So, you know, let's say about 3 o'clock or so, 3 o'clock already, you should not have a regular meal after that point in time. As you're getting closer to Shabbos, you should not have a regular meal. Now, you could be hungry, so you could have a normal breakfast, you could have a normal lunch, you have a little snack, you know, to tide you over. You know, yeah, you could have a little bit of the kugel, a little bit of the cholent, you know, a little taste, not a whole meal. But yeah, a little to tide. No one has to be starving, but you shouldn't be having a whole sumptuous meal before Shabbos. Now, it's very interesting, this point, okay, in the winter, I don't think it's such a problem because you don't have any time before that anyway to do much. But in the summer, it is a problem. And there's many people who make a big mistake in this. Let's say, which there are times Shabbos gets very late. In June, Shabbos, the earliest we're going to see is like 7:30 is the earliest. And if you take it in when the sun sets, you know, you may not, you know, coming home from shul till like 9:30, 9:45. So some people make a big mistake and they figure, okay, you know, 6 o'clock we'll have a real meal. And then when we'll come home from shul, we'll just have a little challah and a little fish and that. That is absolutely 100% the wrong thing to do. Because you're having a nice Friday afternoon meal. You're not having a Shabbos meal. It's a Friday afternoon meal. So in the summer, this becomes more relevant. I mean, even if you otherwise, even, you're still going to be a little hungry. But then 2.5 hours, like you could still have, you know, something decent to eat by 5 o'clock even. And then if you're going to eat later, but the focus has to be that you're preparing. The main meal is the Friday night Shabbos meal. That's the meal. You're eating just enough to keep you going till that point. Okay, that's regarding food. How about clothing? Well, number one, again, this is suggestions. You can, if your schedule works different, you could do it differently. One should wash and launder clothes on Thursday and not wait until Friday because there'll be enough time to prepare the Shabbos. If it's not possible on Thursday, you could do it earlier. Again, you do what works for you. But you want to make sure that all your clothes that you need for Shabbos are clean. Or if you pick up from the cleaners, whatever it is, you don't have to clean the clothes by hand. You know that? You could use the cleaners for that. Okay? Now, immediately after bathing, everyone should bathe in honor of the Shabbos. Okay, if as much as possible to do it on Friday. Gets hard in the winter if you're working, so maybe you have to do it Thursday night. But as much as possible to bathe in honor of the Shabbos, and get dressed in special Shabbos clothes as you respectfully await the arrival of the Shabbos. You know, we say a person is identified by the clothes they wear, right? A policeman wears a uniform. A doctor, in the olden days at least, right, wore a white garment. It showed, oh, he's a doctor. He's a professor. He's an important person. So, you know, the clothes you wear, it's interesting that, what's the Hebrew word for clothing? Beged. Beged has the same root as the word bogade, which means a traitor. And sometimes our clothes betray us. You know, we wear clothes that are not befitting us. And in a certain way, when we're changing our clothes, there is, that's part of your avoda of preparing for Shabbos, is bathing. Bathing on a simple level, I mean, why do we take a bath? Why do we take a shower? Because we're dirty. If you're clean, you need to take a shower. Let's say you didn't do anything today. Let's say you just sat at your desk. You didn't sweat. You didn't run. You didn't do anything. I'm amazed at how much the society nowadays has to shower all the time. It's like, I'm all for hygiene. But, you know, when you know people are like taking 2 showers a day in the winter, like you're wondering, like, what's going on? Like, you know, okay, in the summer, you're sweating and this and that. Okay, I get it. But like people, if they don't shower twice a day, they feel like they're filthy. It's like, but the point being, you do bathe because to clean yourself. So the idea is when you're bathing, you want to feel that you are also not only addressing and cleaning your physical body, you want to be cleaning your spiritual soul. That's what you're thinking. That's the real symbolism behind the bathing. Of course, you want to be clean for Shabbos on a physical level, but thinking about that as well. And then when you're finished that, now you go into your Shabbos clothes. Remember, we say the weekdays are weak. They are sick days. You're not your best. Well, guess what? You know, we garment ourselves in all different types of garments during the week. You know, when the Yetzer Hara gets the best of us, Sometimes we put on a garment of arrogance. Sometimes we put on a garment of anger. You know, we say that the mitos, the characteristics of a person, are the garments of the soul. Are the garments of the soul. So during the week, when it's harder to relate to Hashem as much as possible, and we're under a lot of spiritual stress and assault, often our garments betray who we really are. And therefore, now I don't mean to say that a checkered shirt is a terrible thing to wear. Chas v'shalom. I'm not saying that. But we're talking metaphysically now, that the garments we're wearing can betray who we really want to be. So therefore, on Shabbos, we have special clothing that you only wear on Shabbos. And it is much more expensive than the other clothes. It's kind of stuff you'd wear if you get into a wedding. And that means I'm changed, and you should be thinking, as I'm changing out of my striped weekday shirt and going to my nice, crisp, white, fancy shirt, that I am now taking off my spiritually negative garments to put on more positive ones. You know, the flaming red shirt that matches that person's temper, let's say, will now be a nice, white, pure, less angry person with the clothes they're putting on. So you really have to feel like I'm taking off those are garments that betray me. The fact I get angry during the week, or I'm lazy during the week, or whatever, that betrays my soul. That's not who I really am. So on Shabbos, just like you're putting on special Shabbos clothes, but it's reminding you that you really want to put on special characteristics for Shabbos, as we'll talk more about as we move ahead with this. Yes. Okay. So now, women should also follow this custom, you know, just because sometimes a lot of people dress for events. So, for example, you know, like really, again, the proper way is before Shabbos. Let's say, if you go to a wedding, how do you dress for a wedding? Okay. That's how you should pretty much dress for Shabbos. Because I said, it is the wedding. It's the wedding of the Jewish people and Hashem. It's a wedding. So how much time does it take for you to get ready for a wedding? It takes time. See, now here's where people make the mistake. At a wedding, it's easier to understand it because you see there's a wedding hall. You see there's a lot, everybody's dressed up. There's a fancy smorgasbord. There's a band. There are flowers. I mean, you know you're going into a certain place. Well, what we have to be able to do, you have to look, Shabbos is the wedding hall, and your home is a wedding hall. Your home is the wedding hall. Now, obviously, you don't have to spend the expense of bringing in a band into your house. Although there's nothing wrong on Erev Shabbos piping in some nice Shabbos tunes before Shabbos, you know, through the house. So you kind of feel, you know, Shabbos is coming. You know, that's a good mood setter. But to realize that as the Shabbos comes, that's exactly how you'd be dressed when the bride and groom are under the chuppah. How would you be dressed? Especially if you're the groom or the bride. Okay, I'm not saying you should put on a white wedding dress, but you would put on your nicest clothes. Now, so it's sometimes it's easier for the man to sense it because he's going to shul. Since he's going to shul, okay, I'm going into the synagogue already. So the synagogue already carries a certain aura of holiness. So it's easier for a man to sense, I'm going to shul, I'm not going to go in my striped shirt. I'm not going to look like a weekday guy in the synagogue. Like, that's really... But somehow women, it's harder to visualize that the Shabbos is the same Shabbos in your house as it is in the synagogue. It isn't any less Shabbos in your house. Shabbos is a spiritual atmosphere. And as long as the TV's off in the house and all the electronic equipment's put away and the house looks like Shabbos, the Shabbos, Holy Shabbos, is in your house, just like in the shul. And the women should be dressed as fancily as the man should be dressed. And they should be dressed, as I'll talk about that in a minute, when you're lighting the candles. Because that's when Shabbos is starting. Now, would you go to a chuppah in your robe and tell everybody, okay, the wedding's over, now I'll go home and change to my beautiful thing. You wouldn't do that. So if we understood, as we'll mention next week, when you light the candles, that's exactly when the Shabbos is coming in this house. So now how do you want the Shabbos to see you? In your robe? I understand it takes time. I'm not minimizing all these things. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I tell men and tell women, men have to, let's say they're going to work, they don't have time. I said, get dressed up for Shabbos Friday morning. It's just Friday morning. If you're not going to have time, so you can come on. I know it's interesting. The secular world, it's like casual Friday. It's like so interesting how different it is. But you really have to be ready to go. That's what I wrote in the next point. Woman should follow this custom to light the Shabbos candles while in the special Shabbos clothes and shoes. Yes, and shoes in honor of the Shabbos. Women should take care to wear dressy shoes for Shabbos and avoid wearing slippers, at least when you're lighting the candles. Now, you might be more... Okay, listen, I never understood, and I'm not blaming you, I never understood how women could wear high heels. If I would have to wear them, I'd go crazy. But somehow, it's a fashion thing, and women like that. But I really kind of think they really don't like wearing them. But it's like a pressure. Because that's all I hear from ladies. Oh, my feet are killing me. So I said to myself, why do they wear them? But I'm not going to ask questions on that. But at least if you would wear it at a wedding, at least when you're lighting the candles, to be really dressed nice. Okay, it's hard. I can't wear my high heels in the house for 4 hours. You don't. But at least when you're lighting the candles, you should look your prettiest. And especially also when your husband comes in, should also. But then you can say, okay, now I'm going to have nice Shabbos slippers. You know, you should try to have everything nice for Shabbos. Okay, one should examine his or her clothes before Shabbos to see whether there's anything in them they will not come to carry on Shabbos where there's no Eruv, or carrying Muktzah. So let's say, I have to be really careful, especially when I do weddings during the week. Because I have nice Shabbos suits. So I go to a wedding, I don't wear my regular week, I put on a Shabbos suit. But if I'm officiating, I have to put a few pens in there because I have to do things with the ketubah and things like that. So then, if I'm not careful, on Friday, I got to check, and I'll usually find a couple pens or something in my Shabbos suit. So you got to make sure there's no muktzah items in the shirt, or unless you brought from the cleaners, there's a tag inside. It's got to rip off the tag before Shabbos, things like that.
What about glasses?
What about, well, that's extremely expensive. I mean, that's an enormous expense. I mean, some glasses cost like $700-$800. I would say glasses like your eyes. They really are your eyes. As much as I understand what you're saying, they're also fashionable.
And you say you can carry them?
Oh, I thought you were talking about having Shabbos glasses.
No, I'm just talking about, you were saying about carrying glasses.
Okay, well, if there is, no. Well, if you're in a city where there's an Eruv, you don't have to worry. They're not muktzah.
Oh.
But let's say you're in a city that doesn't have an Eruv. Then you have to be careful. You can't be carrying, let's say, reading glasses with you.
So the best is to just wear
them. You have to wear them. You have to wear them. I thought you were saying you have a special pair of Shabbos glasses. Okay. One should put on his Shabbos clothes shortly before the onset of Shabbos, if possible. One should not put on Shabbos clothing only on Shabbos morning. What I mean to say is many people figure, Friday night I don't have to dress so fancy. A lot of people have this idea, well, really only Shabbos morning, that's the real Shabbos. Because you're in shul, there's a lot of people in shul, people dress fancy. Shabbos morning, that's when I put on my suit and tie and everything else. Friday night I could just, you know, just put on a jacket and that's it. No, you have to be dressed. The entire Shabbos, you are a king or a queen. You are royalty, and you should dress that part the entire time. Final Shabbos preparations. Just as you are rewarded for making all the preparations for Shabbos, so you are rewarded for finishing them on time, so when Shabbos arrives, everything is ready. Very important that you're not scurrying about getting everything done in the last... Again, pretend it's a wedding, right? When you make your children's wedding, I don't think 5 minutes before the chuppah, you're running around and making sure that the hors d'oeuvres are on the table and all these things, whatever. You've got it well planned, well in advance. Same thing over here. Now, here's a very important point. Now, knowing that the Holy Shabbos is coming, we know there's a spiritual rule. For every spiritual reality, there's an equal and opposite negative spiritual reality. So there's a free will choice to do things correctly or incorrectly. Shabbos is coming. It's the biggest spiritual positive energy you can get. That's what's coming. So Yetzer Hara knows that, and he's not happy if you're going to do that. He's going to do everything he can to stop that. And more than that, we know, for example, let's say you're having a contest between two individuals, or let's say a wrestling match, or whatever you want to say, you know, and when the loser is kind of seeing he's almost running out of his power, and he's almost finished, you'll see there'll be this last gasp of energy to try to maybe put everything he's got with his last ounce of energy to try to be able to quickly reverse things. You know, so it's the same thing. Remember, Shabbos is the taste of the world to come. We know when the world to come, when Mashiach's going to come, it's going to be a crazy world right before Mashiach. The Satan's going to be as strong as he ever is when it comes to that, because he's throwing everything he's got, because after that he's finished. So the same thing goes during the week. Every day, the Yetzirah is working hard on you, working hard on you. But now that he knows the Shabbos is coming, he knows how much you can grow on Shabbos. And he knows how important Erev Shabbos is. His job is to make sure that you're very anxious and to get angry on Erev Shabbos. That is his job. And you will find more often than not, the greatest tension in the house is on Friday. Is on Friday. And Murphy's Law works very strongly on Friday. Right? Everything that can go wrong will go wrong. And children will be their most obnoxious on Friday, not other days of the week. You know, whatever, you know, the cleaning won't be ready on Friday. Just so many things can go wrong, and it's meant to be that way. Why? Because to test you. So, therefore, we have to be extra, extra careful not for that to happen. You know, as we'll see, even on, especially on Shabbos, one is not to be angry on Shabbos. One of the most important things is not to be angry on Shabbos. The simple reason is, Shabbos, you are attesting that God is the creator of the world. So if God is the creator of the world, he runs the show, right? Now, what would cause a person to ever get angry? One answer only. The bottom line is, things aren't going the way I want them to be. Which really means, I think I'm God, and I know how things should be, and if they're not the way I want them to be, that's bad. When you get angry, the Gemara says, if you break a plate in anger, it's like you worship the idols. Why? Because that's the whole point. When a person lets his anger get the better of him, he is really expressing the fact that he knows better than God how the world should run. And therefore, Yetzer wants us to get angry on Shabbos. If you get angry on Shabbos, you've defeated the whole purpose of the Shabbos. So he starts early. He doesn't wait till Shabbos. He's starting on Erev Shabbos. And, you know, if you take a little calculations of the times that couples fight during the week, usually the most fights is Erev Shabbos. Usually. Also vacation. But because they got nothing to do. They're not so busy. But usually Friday, it's because of the pressures that exist. And, you know, this is something I find. Well, and you have to go out of your way to be prepared and work through in your mind, okay, what things can go wrong on Erev Shabbos. So if I'm prepared for it, I don't let it get the best of me. And, you know, if there's certain traps. Everyone has their anger traps. They have their buttons. You have to do what you can to avoid those buttons being pushed. And, you know, that, well, enough to just say, you know, we should all figure that out on our own, what we need to do. Yeah, okay. So now, okay, so that's really critical. So, and therefore, and part of that, the anger usually happens if things aren't ready on time. The less things are ready, not ready on time, the more you got to get a lot done, then other things get in the way, and then you get upset. Now, if everything's ready well in advance, and if it's all done, there's very little things that can upset you. You see, so that's why you want to be ready so much in advance. Remember when I was a kid, when I was doing driver's education, so they made you see these real gory movies of, you know, driving movies, you know, of what happened. I remember one of the movies, like Highway Terror, people who weren't carried, they show you these scenes of people, how they're pulling bodies out of cars. They want to scare you so that you're going, because kids don't take it seriously. They think it's fun. It's just seriously. So I remember, I don't know why this one thing stuck in my mind. It was called, the movie's called The Final Factor. What's the final factor? It says automobile accidents just don't happen out of the blue. There's usually a lot of little things going on. So, for example, they talk about a mother driving three kids in the car. So the kids are fighting with each other. That's a factor. It's a stress. But that alone wouldn't cause an accident. You know? Then you got one of the kids playing with the mother adjusting the radio. Right? So no one gets in an accident just by adjusting the radio, but that's another factor. Then it's raining, and the windshield wipers. No one gets in an accident because of rain, but it's another factor, you know? So they're listing a whole bunch, and then comes the final factor. Like, we could take four or five nuisances, but then when another one, but when you've added up the factors, and then all of a sudden, and a kid just jumped out in front of your car. You know, now if the radio wasn't on and the kids weren't screaming, you know, they all take like 2% of your attention away and another 2%. And then that kid just jumps in front, you know, or the kid spilled something on you, whatever. That they call it the final factor. And that's, so I usually apply that to anger. A lot of times, okay, I could take this, okay, the kids, you just mopped the floor and your kid walks in with mud right across the floor. Right? Ever happened, Robin? Ever? When you were a mother? Ever happened? You know, and like you want to kill them, but no, it's normal, you know, but it's an irritant. So you hold it in. Right? And then your husband calls and says, you know I told you I was going to come early for Shabbos, I'd help clean up, but I'm swamped at work and I just can't. The boss may say, another factor, right? You know, and then the factors. And then the challahs that you made, you know, you forgot, you were bathing the kids, and the challah, you smell a burnt smell from the kitchen, and that's another factor, you know. And then sooner or later, that final factor will come, and then boom, you start screaming and yelling at that, and that's the attitude you put into the Shabbos. So that's why you try to minimize all these factors. So the more you're ready, you know, and sometimes it's like, And since I love Sephardic women, but sometimes they get a little bit too overboard with all their salads, you know, and they have to make like 17 salads. They'll come on Shabbos. There's nothing wrong with it if you can prepare them all in advance and it's calm in the house. I got no problem. But if that's making it stressful in the house, the husband, you know, whoever's making the food is kind of, you know, irritated because I got so much to do and I don't have enough time. Better make a few less salads. And be calm before Shabbos. It's a bigger mitzvah to be calm before Shabbos, so you only have two salads. It's not the end of the world, you know. But look up at Shabbos. The biggest honor of Shabbos is to not be angry and stressed. That's the biggest honor of Shabbos. Everything else is also nice, but you have to be careful. Okay, it's customary to buy flowers in honor of the Shabbos. First of all, it's nice. Remember, on Shabbos, we received the Torah. On a Shabbos morning, and you know, same reason we have flowers on Shavuos, because there were flowers on the mountain, so you do that as well. Now, I think, outdated a little bit. It's because of the sharpen the knives on Friday. In the olden days, the guy would come around, you know, sharpen. Yeah. You still have it on our, there's this guy. Okay, if you need it sharp. It's a custom to spread a white tablecloth over all our tables in the house, even the kitchen table. Obviously, for a number of reasons. Number one, our tables are compared to the Mizbeach, the altars in the temple. And we know that white is a color of purity and tshuva. So it's the custom is to have white, because that's the whole. Okay, if you have a really beautiful, other colored tablecloth and it's really great, you could have it. It's not a sin. But it's customary we have it, and not just the dining room. Even if you're not going to eat in the kitchen, it should also, the tablecloth should be there. That's why the shul, I mean, we don't have the money to have fancy tablecloths, but we at least put these white things on. Even if there wouldn't be a kiddush, we would still cover the tables for that. Okay, one should set the table on Friday, if at all possible, because you're showing in honor of the Shabbos, but it should be set before Shabbos. You know, not this business that, I'll set it, my husband's in shul, so after I light the candles, I'll set the table. I mean, you if you haven't, you should set the table then. But really, the whole shop, the home should be ready. When you're lighting the candles, everything should be done. And now you're in Shabbos mode. Okay, I know that's easier said than done. I don't minimize the challenges that every housewife has. There's so many things that have to be done. That's why you got to really think as much in advance as possible that the house is, when you're laying the candles, everything's ready. Everything's ready. Then you're gonna ask, well, what am I supposed to do then? I'll tell you soon. All right? On Erev Shabbos, you should tidy the house. The light should be on. The bed should be made. It is a mitzvah to cut one's nails every Friday, if at all possible, not on Thursday. Again, that's more for men. I mean, some ladies like to grow their nails, so that, but whatever. And the nails should not be cut in a straight order, but we do them in alternative ways for mystical reasons.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'll tell you this another time. The nails should be discarded in a safe place. You should wash your hands after, but you should. Cutting nails is a pretty standard thing to an Erev Shabbos. Mitzvah to get a haircut or a shave on Erev Shabbos as needed. It's customary for men to go to the mikvah after halachic midday every Erev Shabbos. The closer Shabbos one goes to the mikvah, the better. And again, different customs, how many times you dip into the water, just for men, not women. Anywhere from 2 to 14 times, different customs for that. The simple understanding is we know the mikveh has always been something that removes tumah, removes spiritual impurity. It's an idea of cleansing a minimum 2 times. You go once, as it were, to clean away, as it were, the spiritual negativity. And the second time, to bring in the spiritual positivity that comes from there. And with all the messages, same reason why a woman goes to the mikveh, when she goes to the mikveh on a monthly basis, the man goes every Erev Shabbos, because you're taking on the spiritual energy of Shabbos is coming in, and that's a demonstrative activity. And I know you have to budget about 30 minutes at least to go to the mikveh. Now, that you can kill 2 birds with 1 stone. You can, in all good mikvehs, you can take a shower over there too. So if you're going to take a shower anyway, so you have to drive to the mikveh. That means you need another half an hour on Erev Shabbos to be able to do that. It's a mitzvah for both men and women to take a warm bath or shower at Erev Shabbos. When bathing, one should have in mind that he is fulfilling the mitzvah of the sages, and the only reason he's bathing is in honor of the Shabbos. If it is all possible, one should take a nap on Friday to ensure that one is rested at the Friday night meal. Okay? This is considered a key preparation for the Shabbos. Wow. The Tzanzarov told people to sleep for 2 hours on Erev Shabbos. Even if you cannot fall asleep on Friday afternoon, I don't know who couldn't, you should at least lie down for half an hour with your eyes closed. The reason for all this, very fascinating. The Talmud says an interesting statement. The Talmud says someone who dies on Erev Shabbos will merit to the world to come. Now, that's a very funny statement. Does that mean if a wicked person died on a Friday, he's going to get in the world to come? So that's not what the Talmud means. The Talmud means that you die on Erev Shabbos. It means when you get to the point where you are dead to the world. In other words, you've lived Sunday through Friday. You've been in the world of challenges, the world of negativity. And if you can, on Erev Shabbos, so to speak, say, I'm dead to the world now. That world, I'm not interested in that world now. A dead person really is not interested in the world anymore. So if you can, quote unquote, be dead to the world on Friday afternoon, so then, and in other words, you're saying, that was the world of falseness. That was the world of, that's not the real deal. I'm going to now come into the real world now. So now how do you do that? Remember, we're all talking about transitioning. So guess what? When you're asleep, it's 1/60th of death. Talmud says that. You're really not alive the way you are when you're awake. So you are like putting the weak to sleep. And then you're waking up, like, okay, now I'm waking up, it's Shabbos now. Everything else was it's just behind me now. So that's the mystical idea. You're saying goodbye to the week, nighty night to the week. But there's another important idea. It's, you know, we call Jews who keep the Shabbos Shomer Shabbat. Interesting word, Shomer Shabbat. What does the word Shomer really mean?
Guarding.
Guarding. So you're guarding the Shabbos. So now, let me ask you, you ever see security guards? Well, you know, right? People who are security guards in the middle of the night. What's the one thing a security guard should not do?
Sleep.
Fall asleep on the job. So the rabbis tell us, you know, our idea is we're supposed to be guarding the Shabbos. Guarding the Shabbos, you don't fall asleep. Now, of course, you're going to go to sleep at night. But the worst thing is, and you see this all the time, and it's Nebuch, people work hard a whole week. You know, now it used to be husbands, but it's now wives. I mean, everybody's working hard a whole week. And about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock this week, you're tired, you know. And in many shuls, not in our shul, Baruch Hashem, you go and you see during Kabbalat Shabbat, half of the men, that's it. They just, if the guy has a slow tune for Kabbalat Shabbat, that's it. Goodbye, Charlie. The women, you know, light the candles. Let's just go on the couch, say a little to him. You know? And listen, I empathize. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to have to work. But that's not, if remember, we said Shabbos is the big, again, you work very hard to get ready for a wedding. I don't know any fathers of the brides or grooms that fall asleep during the chuppah. Right? You're wide awake. The last thing you want to do is sleep. Right? So, you know, I understand that at night you'll go to sleep. That's fine. But that time when Shabbos coming in, Shabbos meal, all these things, even during a Shabbos meal, you want to start putting those carbohydrates into your system. How many times, like right over the soup? Boom. Or, you know, the worst thing to have in your house is to have a living room, dining room combined with the couch right next to the dining room table. You're right in the middle of the meal. You really have a lot of carbs and calories there. Say, dear, I'm just going on the couch for just a minute. 2 hours later, can you get up? Right? But that's what happened. It's just, that's normal. That's normal. But that's not what Shabbos is about. Shabbos is the king's coming. The queen's here. I'm excited. How can you be excited if you're falling asleep? So guess what? It's amazing if you take a nap. You're taking that nap, so you'll be wide awake during meals. It's so hard, you know. You during a meal, if you're really working hard, you've been working hard the whole week. You haven't caught up in your sleep. Now you're pounding in challah and this. You know, make calories and carbs, and it's just putting you to sleep. And the whole meal is just they're dead at the table. That's not what Shabbos is supposed to be. So therefore, you take a nap. Take a power nap or a good nap. And for the last number of years, I always try my best to be able to do that. And I'm always awake. Now, you could take a coffee, too. But it's a lot to this idea. You're beginning to see, and this is what we're going to end off with over here. Well, maybe we're not ending off over here. Okay. Make sure that all the food you plan to eat for dinner is on the stove, in the oven, before Shabbos begins. All boxes, bags, containers, bottles should be open before Shabbos. All lights and timer switches should be on before Shabbos. All lights and electrical devices that you want off for Shabbos should be turned off before Shabbos, especially the refrigerator, stove lights, and the alarm system. A lot of things have you should have a checklist. I think I sent one before. There's a lot of things that have to be all taken care of, and you don't want that all in the last minute. Okay, the Baal Shem Tov says that as Shabbos arrives, a person should act as if he is no longer alive in this world. That is, he should cast off all worldly concerns. This is the ideal way of preparing for Shabbos. Okay, how are we doing on the time? Okay, we're going to have to stop it here. There's a little bit more to go.